from KQED.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians, on the web at chcf.org. And URS, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical support to public agencies and private companies. URS.com.
This is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. Coming up, game on in Rome as the Cardinals set a date for the start of the papal election. We'll ask the faithful and not so faithful in Southern California what they want in the next pope.
I am not a Roman Catholic anymore, but I pray every day for the unity of the church. And I would love for somebody to come in and say, God wants you just the way you are.
Also, how the federal government is helping Vietnamese immigrants in California overcome a roadblock in their path to citizenship. Plus, how an elite cooking school in Napa Valley is helping wounded veterans and their families.
I am not a veteran. He is. So a lot of times I can't relate to him on certain issues, but cooking I think we're going to be able to relate to each other on.
It's the California Report. What might just be the world's most exclusive election is now scheduled to start on Tuesday. Talking, of course, about the selection of a new pope by the cardinals gathered in Vatican City. The papal election comes as a New York Times poll finds many Catholics yearning for a transformative leader, someone who can move the church forward on issues like gay marriage and the ordination of women. Los Angeles Bureau Chief Stephen Cuevas talked with Catholics in Southern California about their thoughts on a new leader for the church.
It's not so easy for Father Willie Raymond to stay on top of what's going on in Rome. He gave up cable news for Lent.
I decided to fast from watching CNN and MSNBC and Fox News.
But sitting at the computer in his Hollywood office, where he runs a Catholic-based media company called Family Theater Productions, Raymond says he's still keeping tabs via radio and the internet.
There's something really interesting right now. Just go to adoptacardinal.org, and they will give you the name of a cardinal elector, and you can pray for that person. You don't get to choose the cardinal. They just give you at random one of those cardinals.
The communion of faith and technology might be something for a new pope to embrace. So says Sister Patricia Rayburn, who hopes the next pontiff will also be more enlightened about the role of women in the church. She's the Western Region Director of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, which represents some 50,000 nuns across the globe. The Vatican disciplined the conference last year for associating with so-called radical feminists and not speaking out more forcefully against contraception and other issues.
If a new pope were able to really recognize that everyone has gifts, both women and men, and everything doesn't have to start with the Vatican, put out to dioceses some hope to really help deal with the issues of our day.
A majority of Catholics questioned in a recent New York Times CBS News poll say the biggest issue facing the church is its poor management of a worldwide clergy child sex abuse crisis. Southern California Catholics got a front pew view of that issue after court documents earlier this year revealed that Cardinal and former Los Angeles Archbishop Roger Mahoney covered up for pedophile priests and stonewalled authorities. Mahoney publicly apologized, but still traveled to Rome to take part in this month's papal conclave.
He is the man, one of the men, in charge of voting for the new pope. In my view, and the view of many others, Cardinal Mahoney is only going to vote for a man who protects Cardinal Mahoney's interests.
Joelle Castix is with the Orange County-based Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, or SNAP. She believes true reform can only come from a pope who confronts the clergy sexual abuse crisis head on.
If I had my druthers, you know, and a pope was elected who was a real reformer, this would be a man who would open up all the files, who would really rid the church of men like Cardinal Mahoney and strip them of their priestly duties. But even so, I mean, it's to really reform the Catholic Church, they would have to tear it down and rebuild. And I don't think that any one man would be willing or able to do that.
One-time Roman Catholic priest Ned Reedy says it may be time to tear down the papacy, or at least reduce its influence on the church and the world outside its walls.
He's our pope, and the reason he's our pope is because he shares these divine authority that nobody else has. Well, we don't fuss with that because Jesus really talked about the beauty of the community.
Reedy leads a breakaway Catholic congregation called Pathfinder Community of the Risen Christ near Palm Springs. The split was partly over his disagreement with papal infallibility, a concept dating back to the 19th century that boils down to this. When it comes to matters of doctrine and morals, what the pope says goes. And not subscribing to that, especially if you're clergy, can be trouble. After quitting the Roman Catholic Church and forming Pathfinder 10 years ago, the Diocese of San Bernardino convicted Reedy of heresy.
Well, they gave me three reasons. Lack of fealty towards the Holy Father. And then the other was I was in favor of women's ordination along with the whole world. And then the third was that we had open communion, meaning that if people came, we just welcomed them.
So you could say Reedy is agnostic when it comes to the selection of a new Holy Father, but his colleague, Joni Miller, a deacon, says the Roman Catholic Church is losing parishioners because it's out of step with shifting views on issues like homosexuality, contraception, and the ordination of women, issues that spurred her own break. Even so, she's watching the papal election closely.
I am not a Roman Catholic anymore, but I pray every day for the unity of the Church, for all Catholics to be together. And I would love for somebody to come in and say, God wants you just the way you are.
Other Catholic leaders, like Father Willie Raymond in Hollywood, say a new pope must address the defection of parishioners by re-evangelizing parts of the world where Roman Catholicism is on the wane and sinking roots deeper into areas where it's still robust. He worries that there's a growing push by evangelical Christian churches in Latino communities with strong Catholic traditions, like here in Southern California and in Mexico.
Because they're appealing, they're communicating the gospel to them with joy. A lot of Pentecostal, charismatic entities or groups that are really attracting a lot of Catholics away from the faith. So, you know, for someone to come from Latin America, the Holy Father, it could be very healthy for the church in Latin America.
With the new pope comes change. That's a given. The question is whether he will embody the conservative traditions that have sustained the church for centuries or the more modern sensibilities that many Southern California Catholics say the church needs in order to stay relevant. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
As Congress prepares to debate the so-called path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants, 8.5 million legal permanent residents in the U.S. are already eligible. Nearly a third of them live in California, but they're not all becoming citizens. One big obstacle? Language. So, the federal government has launched its first-ever national campaign in Vietnamese and other languages to get out the word about the naturalization process. Reporter Susan Vallett stopped by the kickoff event in Orange County.
Và nếu mà trong trường hợp quý vị đã vào quốc tịch mà con em...
Peter Pham sits with his wife at a Vietnamese language presentation about the citizenship process. Pham became a citizen more than 30 years ago when he was among the first wave of immigrants to flee war-torn Vietnam.
I myself really happy to be American.
Now his wife wants to be American too, but she has limited English to understand the process. That's where U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, or USCIS, comes in. Its Vietnamese outreach campaign is part of a relatively new initiative to reach out in native languages. So far, there have been sessions in Spanish and Mandarin. This is the government's first national immigration outreach in Vietnamese. Pham says it's helped answer questions.
How to fill out and for application and requirements we should have, something like that. Because that's in English, but because we need the Vietnamese to explain more clear.
Kim Chi Tran has that same struggle. She came to Orange County from Vietnam more than 5 years ago She wants to vote and bring family to the U.S. Through a translator, she says she's taken the English language citizenship test twice and failed each time.
Nhưng mà có vậy thôi thì khó nhất là cái viết.
Yeah, the most difficult is the writing part.
Nếu mà cho học viết chừng mấy câu thôi ngắn ngắn thì có lẽ
if I can write just a few sentences short, I can do it. Now I'm 64 years old, I can't remember everything. I'm old.
Tran says growing up in the countryside, she didn't get a good education to start. USCIS does offer to waive the English requirement for people who've legally lived here many years, but Tran hasn't been here long enough.
Mời chị Mai.
Xin lỗi chị, nói rõ hơn trong cái trường hợp đó.
Dạ, như là
đi trên 6 tháng.
Dạ, đi trên 6 tháng mà ở...
It's clear during the question and answer session at the Santa Ana kickoff of the Vietnamese outreach that most of the people in the room struggle with English. Immigration officer Dominic Nguyen is based in Orange County.
Say we have 1.7 million Vietnamese in the U.S., and California is the center for Vietnamese, particularly in Orange County, what we call is outside of Vietnam, we call Little Saigon.
As of 2011, more than 200,000 Vietnamese were eligible to become U.S. citizens. But Nguyen says in places like Orange County and San Jose, with vibrant Vietnamese neighborhoods, newer arrivals find it easy enough to get around without learning English or becoming citizens.
The difficulty they're facing is learning English, speaking English, reading English, watching TV in English. As you see, a lot of the Vietnamese channels are on the TV. Like my parents, they never turn anything else besides Vietnamese channel.
Nguyen says more recent arrivals don't face the same struggles adapting to American life as he did when he arrived after the 1975 fall of Saigon. For Nguyen, learning English and becoming a citizen was a matter of survival. For the new wave of immigrants, not so much. In his job as an immigration officer, Nguyen hopes to give new arrivals a nudge in their own language. Quinn Pham of the Asian Pacific American Legal Center in L.A. thinks the national outreach in Vietnamese will help, but she says there are still barriers.
The cost is $680 per application, so that's a lot of money, and if... And sometimes there are multiple members in the family that are eligible to apply, so the cost could be very high. And the process, it's very lengthy, and filling out the application alone is a very long process.
But Pham thinks it's worth it. She says it's important for immigrants to be able to vote and have a voice in their community.
You feel more and more confident, and you feel that you can engage more and help out in other ways if you become a citizen.
The government plans more outreach events in Vietnamese, Spanish, and Chinese in the coming months. For the California Report, I'm Susan Vallett in Santa Ana.
Among the issues faced by military veterans is a challenge shared by many Americans, obesity. In fact, federal officials say more than 70% of veterans receiving VA care have weight problems. That's where an elite culinary school in Napa Valley comes in. It runs a healthy cooking program for wounded warriors. Its students include vets from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. And as the California Report's health reporter Mina Kim explains, it's helping these vets eat better and easing the tough transition back to civilian life.
In a stainless steel teaching kitchen deep within the stone walls of Napa Valley's Culinary Institute of America, acclaimed chef Lars Kronmark thrusts his hand into the cavity of a raw whole chicken and pulls out a piece of fat.
A big chunk of fat like that, it doesn't really hurt to leave it in there, but in the end of the day, that's still going to be too much fat.
Six military veterans and their partners, dressed in white chef's coats and hats, watch Kronmark closely. His healthy cooking techniques are welcome tips to the group of 12, especially to veteran and Napa Valley resident James McCoy.
I'm of the larger variety, so...
McCoy lives with post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, after serving in Iraq and Afghanistan.
A couple years ago, I didn't care about my health. You know, I was very reclusive and whatnot, but... through therapy and stuff, I've come to realize, you know, like, I've got a younger, you know, child. I want to be around a bit longer, and I'm really not helping myself at all.
Federal officials report more than 70% of veterans who use VA services are either overweight or obese, and recent studies have drawn links between PTSD and obesity. McCoy's doctor recommends he get more omega-3 fatty acids by eating fish instead of fatty meats.
But I didn't know how to cook fish. So after being here, though, I can cook fish, so now I can eat fish.
The four-day Healthy Cooking Boot Camp, as it's called, is a program of the Wounded Warrior Project. The nonprofit serves injured veterans transitioning to civilian life. The boot camp days begin with lectures on subjects like the physiology of taste and end with vets and their spouses preparing dishes for dinner.
So let me show you. Okay?
As the couple span out to three different cooking stations, Chef Kronmark shows McCoy how to expertly slice off a chicken wing to prepare the bird for roasting.
Go for the little white spot right there, okay? That's a white spot, okay?
McCoy's slice is clean.
Oh, my good lord, you look at that. Pro first time. Bam. Love it.
At other stations, a young veteran in a wheelchair quietly peels sweet potatoes. Another purses his lips in concentration as he chops cilantro using only one hand. But for most of the veterans, their wounds aren't visible. Tiffany Rush Green flew in from Phoenix for the class with her husband, Yancey Green, a Marine.
This is the first time I've seen my husband smile in a very, very long time.
Rush Green says the two of them really needed this class.
Finally, we can do something together and take our time and just be a team so we can find that common ground. I am not a veteran. He is. So a lot of times I can't relate to him on certain issues, but cooking, I think we're going to be able to relate to each other on.
Yancey Green says his wife's happy because she won't have to do all the cooking anymore.
I have no more excuses after this week.
Be serving everything in 15 minutes.
As Chef Kronmark warns that dinner time is drawing near, the couple start to stress. Except one, Renee Hampton and her husband, who asked not to give his name because he's on active duty. Renee says her husband loves to cook and learned when he was 5.
Totally, he just said, I'm so in my element.
But chemicals used in the war robbed him of his ability to smell and taste. Still, he says, it doesn't dampen his experience in the class.
This is definitely a dream come true. I absolutely love this. Besides, all my life I've always wanted one of these jackets. Now I get one.
Chef Lars Kronmark says the vets humble him in ways he hasn't felt before.
Makes you remember how lucky you are. It's really amazing.
As the veterans start placing their dishes on a serving counter, roast chicken with lemon and rosemary, Baja fish tacos, and pork loin cooked in a pomegranate glaze, Kronmark beams.
Let's have a great dinner. Let's give you all a hand first.
The next class here in Napa will be in May for spouses and caregivers of veterans. For the California Report, I'm Mina Kim.
If you feel like cooking up some comments about the California Report, you can serve up an email to calreport@kqed.org. Let us know if you have a story idea or if there's something you'd like to hear more or less of. Tell us. Again, it's calreport@kqed.org. You can also comment on past stories online at californiareport.org. While you're there, you can sign up for our podcast, too. That podcast, by the way, also available through iTunes. California is gradually climbing out of the recession, but the economic downturn has left some collateral damage to the American dream, people struggling to stay in or climb into the middle class. Writer Jim Gavin's Middlemen is a collection of stories about characters old and young, all of them adrift in California. Our book critic Oscar Villalone says the Los Angeles author's first book makes the argument that anxiety and bewilderment might be a permanent state.
What you need to know about Middlemen, Jim Gavin's collection of humorous yet stinging stories, is that it's the sort of book you wish people who normally don't read would. Here's a workaday, unglamorous world, mostly set in Los Angeles's failing middle class, that so many people know all too well. Yet we haven't seen the experiences of its inhabitants transformed into something so meaningful and arresting. There's nothing fussy about these comic tales of young men and women running head-on into an unimpeachable fact. Economic uncertainty and personal dissatisfaction may well be the defining traits of their lives. As for the older, that is to say middle-aged or senior characters in Middlemen, they are unsettling examples of what the future holds. Whether still toiling away or at ease in their success, few of these elders can be said to have their lives together. There's a hole in their existence that things such as work or ambition or family cannot entirely fill. The signs that life may not be at all what had been hoped for come early. In Play the Man, a once-promising Long Beach basketball prospect is relegated to playing for a high school team whose coach doesn't really know how to coach and whose players don't really care if they win. Bermuda is the story of a young man who used to slum in Echo Park, reminiscing about the boyish woman who may have been his true love. An aloof musician, 10 years his senior, she's nonetheless a woman laboring under a resignation beyond her years. And in the wonderfully titled Bewildered Decisions in Mercantile Terror, a young San Francisco woman is making a go of it in the new economy. That is, until she realizes she may be as hopelessly out of place as the bipolar cousin she has long been helping. Even Hollywood's Dream Factory can't sustain illusions of better days. In Elephant Doors, a production assistant gets an eyeful of the utterly sad and vapid life of his boss, a game show host. It's a sour insight chased with the bitter epiphany that his true passion, stand-up comedy, can't meet his needs. The collection's two-part title story shows that American bedrock values of hard work and family don't exactly provide solace. The men here are salt-of-the-earth types living in Anaheim and Victorville, yet they too know, somehow, some way, they've missed something. And though it makes one of the characters sad that his father, as Gavin writes, who never complained about anything, might have dreamed about doing something else with his life besides selling toilets, the son also envies his father's ability to move beyond his old dreams. He belonged to this world, the young man notes, day after day. Achieving that sort of clarity, it would seem, is the first step toward figuring out the rest of your life. It is to middlemen's great credit that these stories entertain us all the way toward this sobering realization.
Oscar Villalone is the managing editor of the West Coast literary journal Ziziva. He reviewed Middlemen by Jim Gavin. The San Francisco Bay Area has inspired more than its share of music. Otis Redding's Sittin' on the Dock of the Bay, Tony Bennett, who left his heart in San Francisco, and Lights by Journey, to name just three. Add to that Berkeley-based rapper Tom Shimura, a.k.a. Lyrics Born, who regularly tweets and writes about life in the Bay Area. As part of our series California Songs, he talked with our producer Susie Racho about the inspiration for his song, The Bay.
After years and years of touring, you know, traveling the world, performing and seeing other countries, other states, other cities, I really gained a perspective for how special the Bay Area is. And I just wanted to be able to capture that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will soon touch down in the beautiful Bay Area. Please lean your seats back, cut your turntables up, and always hold a firm and
I really wanted to, you know, illustrate how, you know, culturally and ideologically we're so unique, and I think that's where the song came from.
And we appreciate you riding high protein. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a new day in the Bay.
Where the people are intelligent, articulate, eloquent, artistic, hardworking, and diligent, both progressive and politically spirited, definitely in possession of the militant element. We hella independent, more than a
bit. I've heard people say, I mean, we wanted to move to the Bay Area because of the music. You know, we just wanted to be around all this culture and all this music and all this, all the other things that make the Bay Area special and make the Bay Area known. And, you know, I think for most people not from this area, they look to the artists as the ambassadors, you know, of this culture in this area.
The Bay Area.
Now I grew up in this area from a very early age. It ain't occurred to me the world could be much bigger than the Bay. Now I've journeyed round the earth, man, I can certainly say, if I'm lucky, they'll bury me here. I'll hit the pearly gates. I spent my early days in Berkeley getting thoroughly blazed. Could have very well been worse, but I was mercifully saved. The Bay learned me how to persevere, endure, and maintain, despite adversity, courageously, with purpose and strength. The entrepreneurial attitude we had was surfaced very well, with very little we're able to adapt. From independent record labels, newspapers, and stands, exploring every avenue, nobody gave us a hand.
When I wrote that first version, maybe 2005, I guess it was, the Bay's changed quite a bit in the past 8 years, you know? I mean, and I think that we've sort of become, in a lot of ways, probably more cosmopolitan, you know? But I also think that a lot of the reason why people came here was they were attracted to the culture and they were attracted to the ideas. But as a result, it kind of squeezed some of it out, you know, a little bit. And, you know, I think that part is just we've been a victim of our own success in a lot of ways, you know. But having said that, I still love it.
Hippies, dickies, Asians with pages, heathens and vegans, straight beggars and demonstrators, day laborer, slash caterer, slash bass player, slash waiter, slash painter, slash whatever pays in cash, ace raiders and giants, sharks, warriors and 49ers, the birthplace of defiance.
Earthquakes and fires, the birthplace of defiance, probably the, you know, the one that I rewind in my head the most from that song, because it's so true. I mean, you know, you think of all the movements that are popular now, most of them originated here, you know, from the green movement, obviously the tech movement, the foodie movement, the gay and lesbian movement, you know, it all comes from here, you know, and it's just something that we just have a knack for starting movements. I don't know what it is, you know. You know, I think I might write one every 10 years, you know, just to see how we're doing.
That's Lyrics Born talking about his song, The Bay. You can find it on his 2005 album, Same Different Day. If you have a favorite California song, let us know at calreport@kqed.org. And finally, this is the weekend to spring forward by setting our clocks ahead 1 hour when we hit the sack Saturday night. A little more daylight, a little less sleep. And speaking of sleep, we're devoting a whole show to it next month, and we want to hear from you. If you or someone you know has trouble sleeping, and just about everyone does these days, or so it seems, drop us a line in the middle of the night if you like. Send your sleep or sleepless stories to calreport@kqed.org. Tell us what keeps you up and what helps you sleep, if anything, and how the whole thing affects you and your family. Again, that's calreport@kqed.org. And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. You can always find us online at californiareport.org, and we're on Facebook, too. And you can follow me on Twitter, @ScottSchaefer. Our director is Susie Rocho. Technical producer is Seal Muller. We had additional engineering from Jim Bennett. The online team includes Lisa Pickoff White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Guy Marzorati and Gina Shalaba. Our editorial team includes Victoria Malione, Polly Stryker, Ingrid Becker, Bruce Kuhn, and Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation. With nomination information about the 2014 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards available at www.irvine.org. And the California Endowment. Health happens in neighborhoods at calendow.org.